rugby could soon become like cricket's IPL or Formula One, with reports coming out of the United States that a new Rebel League is set to launch in 2026. In this episode, I'm going to unpack for you what exactly is going on and try to determine whether or not this is a good thing or a bad thing for the sport that we love so much. So there's talk of a new global franchise league that could revolutionize rugby. It is scheduled to launch in 2026, and they claim they've already signed 20 star players, and in total, they're trying to get 280 of the top men's players to sign up, and they also want some of the very best women's players to sign up as well, so that they can have men's and women's franchises. They've taken their inspiration from the IPL, Indian Premier League, and Formula One. The idea being that every week you'll have a series of rugby matches in a different city. Perhaps one of the most attractive things for the players that they're signing up is that the season itself is only going to last for 14 weeks. You heard that correctly. Think of the URC that goes on for at least 17 weeks. That's just the regular season. And then you go into the playoffs, and then you've got the Champions Cup that comes along with that. England and France, they've got their own seasons where you have as many as 30 matches, or even 37 in the case of the French. Every country will have its own guideline in terms of the maximum number of matches that a player is allowed to play. So we're talking about player welfare here, and you compare those numbers with 14, maybe 15, if this competition, which we don't really have that many details on just as yet, maybe has a final. You would think that they would have something of a grand final. And they want these matches to take place in some of the biggest stadiums in the world. And they want it to be a whole day event, so it will include things like concerts and other entertainment for the fans. Apparently, this is how you engage new audiences, I understand that, but also perhaps younger audiences. It is understood that the majority of the players that have been approached so far have been open to agreeing to sign up with this new venture, even though we don't yet know who any of those players are. But this is something that I think is good. Their aim is not to conflict with the current international rugby calendar. So, for example, what they are thinking is that their league takes place in whatever time frame, whatever dates throughout the year, but players can still be released to go and play for the Springboks, the All Blacks, England, France, Ireland, etc., etc. And then, if it does actually come to fruition, it'll then come down to the individual unions as to whether or not they will allow their players to play in this competition. One of the dangers that I can see, especially if the season is only 14 matches, is that a player could potentially sign up for this thing in the United States, although they haven't actually confirmed whether or not it will be exclusively played in the US. But you sign up for this thing, you play your 14 games, and then you could potentially go and sign up and play half the season, maybe in Japan, maybe in South Africa, etc., etc. And the danger that I see there is that now rugby players, and this is where that IPL element comes into it, because we see that in cricket, don't you? A player could play for a franchise in the Indian Premier League for 2 months. Then he goes and he plays for a franchise maybe in Australia, maybe in England, South Africa, the West Indies, and you just become this traveling freelance cricketer. Now, it has already impacted the international calendar. South Africa, for example, have been unable to field players in certain matches because their players were tied up to play in a T20 franchise competition. These guys have indicated that they are not looking to try to do that. Not yet anyway. So in that sense, this is a positive thing. And perhaps this is also the most radical thing we've seen since rugby turned professional back in 1995. At that stage, there was this tug of war between Kerry Packer and Rupert Murdoch. Now, pretty much the only thing these two men have in common is that they are both Australian businessmen and media tycoons. Although Murdoch, as far as I am aware, actually renounced his Australian citizenship to become an American citizen. I don't think that he was able to maintain both. That's the way I understand it. But the reason he became a US citizen, wait for it if you don't know this already, was because at the time, and it may still be the law, I'm not 100% certain, non-US citizens were not allowed to own media companies in the United States, or at least not in terms of a majority stake. So Murdoch just renounced his Aussie citizenship and became a US citizen, because that's what you do in business, don't you? Nevertheless, Kerry Packer, back in 1995, envisaged something like a traveling rugby circus. We don't really know these days how much of it may have come to fruition, but the way I understand it is that you were going to have franchises, and then every week or every second week, different teams in different countries, different cities, and they may or may not have actually been playing as South Africa, New Zealand, and so on, but maybe it would have just been a franchise-based competition. And maybe not even like Stormers, Bulls, Lions, Sharks. It could have just been like one team would have been called, let's just say for argument's sake, the Singapore Sharks. And maybe you would have had the Tokyo Dolphins and whatever, the London Storm, or, you know, whatever it is. I'm just making up names here. And then, let's say the London team, maybe only half of the team might have actually been Englishmen, and the rest would have been South Africans and Kiwis and so on and so forth. It never happened, so we don't really know. And one of the reasons it never happened is because Louis Late convinced the New Zealanders and the Australians at the time to go with Murdoch, and that's actually where the Tri-Nations came from, because that was the big idea at that stage. And pretty much we were the ones who held all the cards in those days, because we had just won the Rugby World Cup, and pretty much the broadcaster, whether it was going to be Murdoch or Packer, they wanted us. We were the meal ticket. We were the big meal ticket at that stage. And pretty much whatever it is that they wanted to do was not going to be feasible without the Springboks or without Francois Pienaar. So that just gives you an idea of what was going on at that stage. So maybe, as it turns out, we have a little bit of a crisis for the new World Rugby chairman, Brett Robinson. The timing of this announcement is very, very interesting. And I can't help but wonder if Abdelatif Benazee had won the chairman role at World Rugby in their elections last week, as I and many others had hoped he would, if perhaps this thing would not have been announced as seemingly a rebel league, but maybe as something that was in cahoots with Benazee. We don't know, and I suspect that we're not going to know either, unless Benazee tells us something. But I wonder, it's one of those things that you suspect could be a secret that goes to the grave. Now, coming back to Robinson, he did say after his election that the financial stability and sustainability of the member unions is not in a very good space. In fact, he described it as a crisis point, and he spoke about ways to deal with that. One of his suggestions was to impose, I hate that word, but anyway, impose a UEFA-style financial fair play system. Now, let me tell you, if you are a football fan, you will know that the financial fair play system within UEFA has been nothing short of disastrous. If you are not familiar with it, let me try to explain. The concept is actually a solid one, right? The idea is that you as a club or a franchise, or I think in this instance, it's not going to be about clubs or franchises. It's actually about national unions. So it's going to be about England, South Africa, SARU, New Zealand, Australia, etc., etc. Okay. And the idea is that you are not allowed to spend more money than what you actually generate. Now, different federations or confederations have got different rules. So like, for example, in the English Premier League, their rule is that over a 3-year period, you are not allowed to make a loss of more than £105 million. That sounds like astronomical money, but don't forget that you can easily buy two players, sometimes even only one player, for that kind of money. So just to keep things in context here, for those of us who don't quite have $105 million or pounds in our bank accounts. So the Premier League has one rule. UEFA has a different rule. The clubs have to abide by both if they are competing in both competitions. And if Robinson's idea is going to apply to rugby federations, well, then I've got very, very bad news for a federation like Wales, for example. Wales are in big trouble at the moment, right? Domestically, things are not going well. The national team is not doing well. And in terms of money, the country is really, really struggling. When I say country, I mean the Welsh Rugby Union. So If we're going to say, as per Robinson, that they are not allowed to spend more than they generate, well, then what exactly is it that they are going to actually be able to spend? One of the things that a guy like Yuri Roux will tell you, the CEO of SA Rugby or SARU, is that you have to spend money. You have to invest in your grassroots, your development programs, etc. Because if you don't do that, then you don't have a pipeline of players that eventually come through. And then at the top level, you also have to spend money. This is not just for the obvious things, but you're thinking about match days. Yes, they generate income, but you need all sorts of other things as well. Like a player might need a meal, for example. Yes, I know that that's a small expense, but these are all the little things that start adding up. And at the moment, England and France are most likely to be able to get away with it, if you know what I mean. Whereas Wales, they can't get away with it. Italy can't get, Fiji, they got no hope. So a financial fair play model is something, and we've seen it in football, what it actually does is it just protects the richest teams, or the teams that have already got money. So South Africa will be protected. So in that sense, we shouldn't complain. But Fiji, well, they've got no hope. They've got a snowball's chance in a very hot place of advancing or of being able to advance to the next level. Georgia, what hope have they got? Uruguay, how are they going to be able to get better if Brett Robinson doesn't want to allow them to spend more money than what they're currently generating? And yes, you obviously have to balance things. I understand that. But let's say that a rich Uruguayan businessman in Montevideo decides that he wants to pour money into Uruguayan rugby. Brett Robinson is going to turn around and tell them, no, you can't do that because the money's coming from outside of rugby. It's a load of nonsense. It's total nonsense. And that's where Robinson appears to be heading. I hope he doesn't head that way. But now you can see that if that is indeed where Robinson wants to take rugby, players from countries like Fiji, Uruguay, Georgia, Italy, Wales, why will they hang around if they can just hop on board the US gravy train that we're talking about here, this new rebel league? The attitude will be, oh, I'll just go play there. And then if you're going to be stubborn like the Welsh Rugby Union and say, oh, well, if you play your rugby outside of Wales, we won't select you for the national team. Well, then you can see a scenario where it won't take very long before Wales just virtually disappear. Nobody wants to see that. Wales is a proud rugby nation. We don't want to see them disappear off the map. Now, I'm not saying that this is what is going to happen, but these little plans that World Rugby and Brett Robinson have in place and are proposing, and you factor in this new rebel league, it leads in that direction, and I don't like it one bit. Now, this new franchise league is actually being presented as an opportunity to build a new commercial model for professional rugby. So in that sense, it's very interesting. Let's see what it's all about, I would say. It could provide better wages for the players. That's a good thing. It could also allow money to flow down the pyramid and encourage the kind of innovation that you see in the NFL, for example. World Rugby don't like things like that, let's be honest. Those players have already expressed an interest, are thought to be attracted by the shorter season. Of course they would be. Why play 30 games if you can play 14 or 15? But also the player welfare benefits that come with it. By the way, the early reported salaries, are you ready for this? 14 million rand per annum. That's not bad money if you can get it. So what do you think? Do you think this new rebel league is a good idea? Do you think World Rugby are in a bit of a pickle here in terms of what to do with it? Do you think they should embrace it? Let me know what your thoughts are in the comment section down below. And if you've enjoyed this video and you'd like to support me, you can head on over to my Patreon page and sign up as a patron. Why would I like you to do that? Because I want to go to the Rugby World Cup in 2027 and provide you with daily coverage from down under. But I'm going to need a little bit of funding to make it happen. If you sign up as a patron, it starts from as little as $5 per month. And there's all kinds of fun benefits that come with it. I will put the description or the link in the description area below, and I'd be very, very grateful for your support. You can also, in the meantime, hit the like button or croc roll the like button if you've enjoyed this content, and you can also subscribe to the channel if you haven't already done so. And since we're talking about the United States, two South Africans who have influenced rugby on that side quite substantially in the last few years, I would say, would be Andre Snyman. I did an exclusive interview with the former Springbok centre over here. He also played wing a little bit, but he was more of a centre. You can watch that. It's on your screen right now. And the other one is Coach Heineke Meyer, who was very successful with the Houston Sabercats. I did an exclusive interview with Heineke. It's on your screen over here. And I look forward to your company in the next episode.